Good day, listeners. Jonathan Daugherty here with another edition of the Pure Sex Radio program. You know, we're a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries, and we exist to help individuals and families move from sexual brokenness to wholeness in Christ and equip others to do the same. Now, some parts of today's episode contain elements of a couple's story that are sensitive and might even be triggering for some listeners, so I just encourage you to listen with care. In this episode, I chat with Phil and Priscilla Fretwell about their incredible journey of healing and redemption from sexual brokenness in their marriage. They are the founders of Savage Marriage Ministries, and they help other couples now overcome their past and fight for their future. In our conversation, Phil opens up about his long-term struggle with pornography and the devastating impact it had on their relationship. Priscilla shares her raw emotions of betrayal and anger and how she found the strength to forgive. Together, they highlight the importance of honesty, vulnerability, and seeking help. Their story is a powerful reminder that even in the darkest times, transformation and healing are possible through faith and open communication. To learn more about Phil and Priscilla and their ministry, visit SavageMarriageMinistries.com. For additional resources, visit BeBroken.org or check out all the links that we're going to put into today's show notes. And of course, friends, please rate and review the podcast after listening to help others find it. Now let's get into today's conversation with Phil and Priscilla. Well, all right. Welcome, Phil and Priscilla Fretwell. How are y'all today?
Doing well. Glad to be with you today.
Yeah,
we are so, I'm so glad to have you on today because, you know, one of the things that we love in this ministry is we love to hear stories of redemption. We love to hear stories where God has transformed brokenness into wholeness. And so I want to just dive right in because in a little bit, we'll get to sort of the end of the story and some of the stuff you guys are doing in ministry in order to help other marriages heal from sexual brokenness. But tell us your story.
Sure. Glad to do that. Well, 10 years into our marriage, Priscilla discovered I had a problem with porn and masturbation, and she knew nothing about it. So it was a huge surprise. And I had hidden it all from her. She was a missionary kid. And so I knew that this wouldn't be acceptable to her. And so she had gone away for a weekend. And I rented an adult video. And she came back and they were looking for it at Blockbuster. And it wasn't Blockbuster. It was 16,000 Movies, another one, like a competitor. And they couldn't find it. And so they called the house and Priscilla answered the phone.
Yeah. And they called and wanted to know where the videos were. And I said, well, what's the name of the video? And I could not recognize the name. Right. And so I said, let me call my husband. Let me see if he rented that. And so I called Phil at work and I said, hey, did you rent videos? And there was kind of like a silence. And he said, I'll be home in 5 minutes. And so he came home. And
so it was like a knife to my heart on that. And it's one of those things, Jonathan, you know, you never want to get a call like that you've been found out, because I had certainly worked very hard to hide this. And Priscilla didn't know that it had been a problem since I was probably 10 years old. My dad had left us. He remarried 3 days later, created a big hole in my heart, my relationship, and porn and masturbation became a convenient drug that I continued to use. So even though I became a Christian at 21, the problem didn't go away. And we got married at 27. I've still got this problem. And now I'm 37 at that point, and I've still got the problem, but now I'm found out. And so I did what many guys do. I went out and hired the best Christian counselor I could find, because Priscilla said she wasn't going to live like this anymore.
I was not. He needed to get it fixed and do it like right now. I actually left the house to go do something. And when I came back, he already had the counselor set up. So he did it.
Well, I was under a lot of stress and trying to deal with this. At the same time, we're active in our church. I'm a leader in the community, and we determined that we're just going to keep it quiet. And so we don't tell a single soul. We don't tell anybody at church. The only person that knows is the counselor I've hired. So
yeah, we kind of put everything underneath the rug and lived in denial for the next 17, 18 years.
So during this time, I convinced Priscilla that I've gotten better. After about 5.5 years of counseling, I tell her that I'm kind of done with it. I'm fine. She knows very little about what's going on at the counselor's office.
I asked some questions and he let me know that I don't want you asking questions about what is said in counseling.
It's kind of my private world, you know, with my counselor. So,
which is interesting, Phil, right? To be able to, because essentially it sounds like you just shifted from one private world to another private world, but behind a counselor's door, it feels like it's right?
Yeah.
To be private. Whereas behind a door with a, you know, bad video, you're like, well, that's wrong. And yet both the dynamics are the same in terms of being hidden, right?
That's right. That's exactly right. And so then what happened is what had started with porn and masturbation now turns into massage parlors. And I was traveling all over the world and I was at a hotel in another country, name brand hotel, and went to get a massage at the spa and was offered more than a massage. And I took it and I left. And now I'm really in despair because, Jonathan, I had convinced myself that that's a line I would never cross.
Mm-hmm.
My dad had been married 7 times, my mom 4 times. And I just kept saying that, you know, this problem I have with porn and masturbation, at least is letting me remain like true to Priscilla, which makes no sense. You know, I get it, but that's a lot of times we get logic to back up what we really want to do. And that's kind of where I was. And so we have a period now of like 18 years that goes by. And we look perfect. I'm the chairman of the elders at our church. I'm teaching weekly Bible studies.
Homeschool mom, got 5 little kids, you know, doing everything at church, the kids program, missions trip, you name it, we did it.
Because it was all about maintaining an image. We wanted to look good and be somebody. And I was consumed with that both at work and in my church and in my community. So it's a big fake life. And you really have no idea what's going on,
no.
Although you do have some dreams.
Yes. I mean, during this time I'm having dreams and the dream is always the same dream. It's a dream where we're together. There's another woman and he's flirting with the other woman and ignoring me. And, I would wake up and I would be so angry that this dream is being repeated. And we would talk about it and he would say, well, you know, I only love you. And so, you know, it was just a mess back then.
It really was. And so this goes on for like, we have now like an 18-year period. So we have a 10-year period when I found out. Now we got an 18-year period. So now we're 28 years into marriage.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds crazy that you can live this long like that, but that's what I was doing. And I was managing an enormous amount of sin. And at the same time, trying to look outwardly righteous, religious, and like a good dad. But I got to a place, Jonathan, and it was in 2017, that I was tired of the masquerade. And I didn't know how to get out of it. I felt like I tried everything. If you gave me the list of things to do, accountability groups, counseling, apps on my phone, I kind of had done all that. And I just was very frustrated with myself, didn't know the way out. And I really started crying out to God. And I didn't know what that rescue looked like. But a few months later, I noticed some symptoms that led me to believe I had contracted a sexually transmitted disease. Now, I hadn't, but I thought I had. And it scared me to death. It's what pushed me over the edge. And I remember very vividly concluding that I had to tell Priscilla. But I had this trip planned. And I was going to be going out of town. It was a long plane flight. It was going to be gone a week. And I knew I couldn't just tell her and leave. So I concluded I needed to take this trip. So I got on the plane. And what I was able to manage while I was at home with other activities, I got on the plane and the plane door shut. And I just started crying. And I couldn't stop crying. And I cried for 5 hours. And I finally got enough courage to reach out to a good friend of mine. And I just dumped it all on him. And he said, listen, I know a guy that can help you. And so in about 20 minutes, I was on the phone with a guy named Paul Speed from Whatever It Takes Ministries. He shared his story. I shared my story. And I said, I really need help. And he said, Phil, he goes, I know you think that you've got a big immorality problem, and you do. He goes, but your real problem is your pride. And you have been a proud, arrogant man that has never let anybody get very close to you. And it's like the Holy Spirit touched me inside in that spot, right in that moment. And I realized he was right. And he said, you need to break the back of the pride in your life, because God resists the proud and he gives grace to the humble. And you need to start first by going home and telling Priscilla everything that's happened. As much as she wants to know, she has a right to know. And then he goes, then you're not going to stop there. You're going to tell all your kids. He goes, because you've been a hypocrite to them, and your sin has obviously affected them. And then all the people that you've been a hypocrite to in your church and your elders, you're going to share with them too, and just come clean with everybody. And that's what started the process.
So I've got a question. First of all, for you, Priscilla, this trip when Phil left, I'm just curious, were there any dreams during that time that he was away, or was there anything that was going on in your spirit that was stirring during that time?
During this trip, no, there was none. I think he was in such a broken state when he went on this trip that I don't believe you acted out at that time.
No, I didn't.
He was like in a broken state. No, I did not have a dream this time.
So then, Phil, tell us when you came back. Okay, tell us what that disclosure to Priscilla was like.
Yeah, so it was awful. I walked in and we sat at the table, and Paul had told me that whatever she wanted to know, I had to tell her, and she wanted to know a lot. And so I spared no detail as she asked questions. And but I remember trying to start the conversation. And I don't know if you've ever been, Jonathan, like, you know, you need to say something and you can't make your mouth work.
Oh yeah.
You know, and that's the way I felt. But you said I looked like I was having a nervous breakdown.
Yes.
Because you said, are you okay? And all I could mumble is, no, I'm not.
Right. And your mouth is moving and nothing's coming out. And he looked like a wreck. He really did. And it was a, that was a day I will never forget, because everything I thought that was true in our marriage was false. And there was havoc in that kitchen that day. And I just saw everything crumbling down, and everything that I had put my hopes in, everything that I had worked so hard in myself to control and have a perfect family, now is unraveled. And it was a very hard talk that we had. And it was the first time that I have ever seen Philip really break down, because him being the way he used to be, which was, I know everything. I know the answer to everything. I know what to do. I don't need help. I got it together. That was not the man that I saw. Mm. And I saw a different person emerging.
So, but before you saw that different man emerging, you're having a crisis moment in your kitchen, right?
Yeah.
So you've had 28 years of a history. This is obviously bringing up things from 18 years ago that you had thought, I thought we had all this under control and everything was dealt with. So how did you, Priscilla, handle almost kind of what is a re-traumatizing around this issue that you had thought was okay?
Yeah, well, it was very, all hell broke loose in that kitchen, to be honest. It was I could not believe that he had done this, because we had been so, how would you say?
Intentional.
Intentional in how we lived our life. And even the fact that he had time to do this, and he had time to live this, he was living a double life. So how can you do this? I know your schedule. Even his EA at work would say, I can't believe Phil's schedule, how tight it is. And then just the fact that all of this, to me, my life looked like a lie. Everything about our life was a lie.
Yeah. So then, Phil, you mentioned that you not only confessed to Priscilla, but you confessed to your kids and you confessed to the leadership at your church. What was the age range of your kids that you, when you confessed to them?
Yeah. So we had, you know, the dynamics of our family, we've got three older kids, then we have a gap of 13 years and we have two younger kids. And so our older kids were kind of all mid 20s. One was married, one was engaged, and the other was single. And then our younger kids were 9 and 11 at the time. And when I first started sharing all this with Priscilla, she said something like, well, almost like we got through it one time and we'll get through it again. And I said, no, it can't be like that. We got to tell our kids. And I remember when I said that, you really started crying.
Yeah, I actually started just groaning with pain of, you cannot tell the younger two kids.
And
you cannot go there. I will not let you do this.
And I said, we need to tell them. And so, but we kind of went back and forth and we kind of tabled it just because we needed to kind of move on and not get stuck on this. But eventually we did come back because we realized that secrecy had been an issue. And I had concluded I was not going to have a secret life. And we didn't want to have our younger kids at some point in their teens find out the story and conclude that there's been a big family secret.
Mm-hmm. So then you also mentioned that you confessed this to church leadership. How did that go?
Well, they were pretty surprised, as you can imagine. And we had, I mean, some people resonated with it, and some people had their own story. But I'd say they were very gracious in general to listen to where we were. We had since moved churches, so it wasn't none of this was related to our church move. So we were kind of going back to previous people that we had been at a church and sharing all this, but they were very gracious to hear it. Somewhat surprised, but I felt like it was an important step. And I'd say, Jonathan, just as an aside, you know, in these confessions, it wasn't just me sharing what happened with Priscilla. I felt like I had particular offenses toward each person that as a result of this. So with the elders, I had to take responsibility for just where I was. I probably made some bad decisions, probably wasn't a good leader because of where I was.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just it. I mean, there's our deception affects each relationship in a unique way because we're deceiving the people in our lives in different ways because there's different contexts, right? So,
right.
So my question now is, okay, so now this is out in the light.
Mm-hmm.
Talk through what your kind of recovery process was like from that point for you, Phil, but also, you know, Priscilla, you're still sitting here. Somehow you had to work through issues of grief and forgiveness. And so can you guys talk about what this overall recovery process looked like for you?
Yeah. So in that moment in the kitchen, Phil had, for the first time in his life, had asked me for help. And he stated, Priscilla, something's wrong with my mind. I have something wrong with me. And will you help me? And I said I would. And he told me about this retreat for women that Whatever It Takes Ministry does. And so he said, I signed you up and I bought the plane ticket. It's in Georgia. Will you go? And I said I would go, mostly because I wanted to get away from Phil. Okay. And just to be able to breathe by myself. But I went to this conference and it was only 15 women. So it was very small, but it was the first time, Jonathan, that I was able to look at myself where I was with the Lord. And it wasn't a good place because you see, Phil had been a hypocrite. But I had been a hypocrite I was pharisaical. I was a Pharisee that I put on a show that I was this church lady that had it all together, and I didn't. I had so much anger from the 17 years and unforgiveness, not just for Phil, but for my family of origin and the things that happened back there. And for the first time, I heard God's voice. And he said to me, Priscilla, I didn't bring you here to fix Phil. I brought you here to fix you. And you see, I needed to be fixed myself. I was a mess. I was a really messed up person because my whole rebellion, I was rebellious towards God. I was putting on a front, but I was rebellious. And it was the first time that I faced how apathetic I was towards God. I was a Christian who did not care what God's word said. I knew God died. He brought his son, died, resurrected. I received the Lord when I was 6, but that's it. I hardly ever read my Bible, only when he made me, we would do devotions, you know, and nobody liked it, but we did it. And so it was the first time that God brought me face to face to where my life, where is my life in Christ? Mm-hmm. And if I was in a dry desert, I was dying. I was withered inside. It was just a desert, dried up desert. And it was the first time I had ever looked inside of me and faced my sin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, how hard is that? Because my wife said a similar thing when she went through her own sort of journey of healing. And it was a little shocking to her that God, you know, she's coming to express her pain based on my betrayal of her. And it wasn't immediate, but eventually God did bring her to the same kind of place that he did with you, which is saying, let's talk about you, daughter. I want to heal you, not just from the betrayal, but from some other things. First of all, what did that feel like for God to kind of turn the tables a little bit? Not in an equivalent kind of way. Obviously, your sin was not equivalent with what Phil had done and vice versa. And so God deals with us personally. But was that a little shocking for you that God was wanting to address things in your life when you're going to this retreat because of what Phil had done?
Yeah. Well, to me, it was just amazing to hear the voice of God speaking to me, which I never had heard that before. And there was so much peace in that I really felt the love of God for the first time. I had never felt that before. And it was the first time I experienced God's love. So for me to take the first step in saying, okay, God, what do you want to do next with me? Felt very, I was at ease and at rest with that. Not that this was perfect. It wasn't. But it was a turning around of my life to depend on God. Because you see, our relationship in the 28 years, Philip was my God. Mm-hmm. He was my little God. He worked everything out for me. He provided for me. He loved me. All this stuff, right, that we just kind of just ignored. I ignored God. Because I had a little God that was doing the job.
Yeah. So Phil, now you took a major step. Confession is a major step, like, right, bringing everything to light. Mm-hmm. Sometimes guys can falsely assume that's all that's necessary, just bringing things into the light. But what were the next things that had to happen? What were the next things that were part of your journey of really learning to live in the light, not just mm-hmm. bring things in a momentary way into the light?
Right. Well, the Lord started showing me that the confession I made to Priscilla of the things that I had done, the offenses toward her, was just part of the story of transparency, and it wasn't all. And so I started having to work backwards. So I felt like God showed me that I've never done anything I didn't think about first, and I needed to go back and deal with my fantasies. So I started confessing fantasies to her, and I found that every time I did, they started releasing. And then I started working backwards. I had to work back through other relationships, what I had. And then I had to work back into things that happened as a kid on my take it to the grave list, right? And so then we had our own take it to the grave list. You had one too, right? And so we start sharing these back and forth. So we really become transparent in this.
It was the first time we became transparent to each other.
Yeah.
Because we really actually was. Married under false assumptions.
Yeah. We just didn't know. And
we were perfect.
But then what we started doing, Jonathan, is, you know, she had gone to an intensive. I went to an intensive. And those intensives started changing our mind about really who God was and who we were. And so we really started at the feet of Jesus. So we were getting up really early in the morning. We couldn't sleep. And we were spending a lot of time together processing with our Bibles and praying. And it was just a beautiful time.
Of crying out
to God. And so we felt like we had God right there leading us. And I know that sounds awfully religious and doing it that way, but it really wasn't religious at all. It was very much relationship. And that was 7 years ago. And that is still part of our daily practice. We were up in the morning and we still have that time together. And I think what we've learned is we were at a place where many couples are, is that we did not know each other spiritually. We knew, like, if you said, do you know Priscilla spiritually? I would go through and talk to you about the activities we did. I'd say we go to church and blah, 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 blah. But what we have discovered is we didn't know each other spiritually at all. And we had to go back to the place where we started becoming intimate spiritually. That led to emotional intimacy. And then our sexual intimacy got really restarted as a reflection of the intimacy that we were already experiencing in our spirits and in our souls.
That's great. And
so that's what really happened to us.
Yeah. And I love the progression there. But as we know, anything that is worth pursuing, which God has created all the things that are worth pursuing, right? We know that there's obstacles along the way, right? There's always challenges. What were some of the hardest parts of reconciliation? What have been some of the obstacles and maybe some of the hurdles that you guys have had to face? And especially when I think about rebuilding trust, what does communication look like? How do you rebuild some of those? What are some of the obstacles to rebuilding that intimacy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I think that one of the first things that we had never before looked at was triggers, things that are happening that are either triggering me or triggering Phil. In this transparency that we started to talk to each other and being really honest, okay? We were so honest. We were like about everything that was going on in front of us and around us. And it was a two person doing this, not just him saying, hey, I don't feel good in this place, you know? And so we started to deal with what we call triggers. And those were ups and downs. Those, you know, I mean, we look at the past 7 years and we say, wow, this has been great. But in the 7 years, there were times that we were up and then, okay, now we got to go. Mm-hmm. So it was not always like, oh yeah, everything is, you know, great.
But nothing has helped me more, Jonathan, to be able to talk to her about this stuff in a real open way. I mean, we had a situation, this was just a month or so ago, where we pulled into we were going to this little Brazilian grocery store that Priscilla wanted to go to. And we pulled in and parked, and there was a massage parlor right in the corner that I had been to. And we parked and turned off the car, and she started to get out. And I said, hey, I need to share something with you. And she said, what? And I said, I'm just getting a big trigger right now. And she said, why? I said, I've been to that massage parlor right there.
And I said, do you want to go in there and share Jesus? Because I will.
And I said... And I said, I don't want to go into there in any circumstances. But it's just that we can get to that place. We're at a place now that I can invite her into my places of temptation. And we can walk through that. And what we have found is to live a life where I don't have to have any secrecy about what's going on in my head starts removing a lot of the power that has had over me. And so a lot of people say they just can't believe we live a life like that now, but we really do.
Yeah.
And it's been a process.
Yeah.
And
there's always such, there's freedom and peace in telling the truth. I like to say it this way, you know, when you tell the truth, that's all you have to remember.
Right. So
it makes things very simple. But I do want to ask this before we wrap up our time today is, How has your story affected your family? Obviously, your confession went beyond just Priscilla. And so the fact that this has kind of been lived out in front of other people, what kind of effect has that had on your family?
Yeah, so our daughter, Sarah, had told us a while back that we really changed the trajectory of our entire family. I think she referred to it as a ripple effect. And so it's interesting, the book that we wrote, it's very much a back and forth between Priscilla and me. It's in our own voice, but all of our kids had their own section in our book. All five of them, even our youngest ones, where they wrote it. And we actually just finished the audio version and they read it in their own voice on what they wrote, because it really was transformational in their own lives to take them to a different place of transparency with their spouses and with each other. You know, the one thing that I really wasn't expecting in that, so when I shared this with my mom, so she was, I think, 84 or 5 at the time, and I knew this would crush her because I had been kind of the man of the house growing up, and she thought I'd hung the moon. And when I shared with her what was going on, and you were there that day, she kind of looked around and she said, well, she said, you know, we all have secrets. And I said, so Mom, what kind of secrets do you have? And so she paused a bit, but she said, 46 years ago, I had an illegal abortion. I've never told anybody. And it was a time when my dad had left us and the divorce was final, and so she was went to a bar, met a guy, and they ended up having sex, and then she got pregnant, and she was a single mom and a school teacher at the time, and she begged her doctor for her help, and her doctor arranged an illegal abortion for her in New York. And so so at the time, I said, well, you need to share that with Cindy, my sister, her daughter. And then my sister came over with her husband, and they shared. My mom shared her story about the abortion, and then my sister shared with my mom the story about her abortion that my mom wasn't aware of. And so so we saw that our story, I will tell you, John, I would have been happy with just me coming out alive at the end of the day. I had no vision that this would be more than me struggling through and putting a marriage back together, maybe. And but what we've seen is God did just much more in the story as we've been willing to share and be open and transparent about it.
Yeah. And so let's talk about that. How has your story really turned into a ministry to help other couples?
Yeah. So that's something else that we didn't see coming. It's like we have, I'd like to say we had some huge strategic plan, but we've not. And we followed just kind of step by step as we've seen God lead us to take a step. And it started about a year and a half after I came clean. We started leading small groups in our house. We put together a curriculum. We stayed a week ahead in the group. And we finished a study guide. And we did that for a year or two. And then somebody said, you really ought to write a book. And you did this all backwards, by the way. You should have written the book first and then wrote the study guide. And we're like, you know, whatever. And so then we decided to write the book, and we published that, and we published the study guide, and then we started doing a podcast. And so today we have that ministry, and we also do online coaching. And so that's something we weren't sure we wanted to do either, but that's been really terrific to meet with couples. And what we have found, and you've probably seen this too, that as you reveal parts of yourself to people, they now have confidence to reveal parts of their self to us. And so, you know, there's a verse that says a man's heart's like a deep well, but a man of understanding can draw him out. And so we focus on asking really insightful questions that we believe the Holy Spirit gives us as we talk to people. And we use that to draw them out from where they are.
Where can people go to get more information about your book and your ministry?
Well, they can go to our website at savagemarriageministries.com. And our books are available on Amazon. And it's just Savage Marriage, Triumph Over Betrayal and Sexual Addiction. And then we have the Savage Marriage Study Guide. And those are both available on Amazon. And then people can also get coaching from us on our website. They can just sign up. And we do it all on a donation basis. And because we realize not everybody can afford some of the fees that people change, people charge. And so this is very much a ministry for us where we're trying to help people.
That's great. Well, thank you all so much for just being willing to share your story and be on the program today.
Oh, so glad to do it. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah. Well, listeners and viewers, we're going to put information in our show notes about how you can get connected with Phil and Priscilla and their book. But our goal here is we want to help you take your next best step towards wholeness in Christ. So please reach out to us, and we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.